ne va patire domani.
Villa Romana, Firenze. The perfect set and landscape to re-reenact and present Devo Partire Domani, the five channels video by Ming Wong and inspired by Pasolini's Theorema. The journey starts as you enter the gate of the villa. A map will help you finding the five rooms wherein the five chapters of the video are projected. You will be the one to choose whoever visit first, to meet five persons, alone in their own solitude, undergoing a massive identity crisis.
There is not one character who is bigger or more important than the other. It's very much up to the visitor to have a sequence of who she or he wants to meet. So in that sense, that alienation is also on its own. It's not like, it's not dictated who you should meet, who you would see. And I think that's a more kind of natural kind of interaction with the work. A lot of my previous projects are multi-screen installations, and I deal also with the conventions of filmmaking. Not just filmmaking, but also the mechanics of film production, of promotions, of how it's received and consumed by audiences. For a long time, I've always been appreciative of multiple perspectives. I always look out for this openness to the presentation and reception of the project. It usually involves some kind of movement around a space, and I like to work with architectures and certain sites and environments. For example, coming to Villa Romana, the moment you step in, you kind of have this feeling of stepping into, of sharing this part, this history of all these artists, of all these kind of footsteps of artists who have passed through the grounds. And the grounds is still evolving, and Angelica, latest director, has made some kind of like adjustments, which I was very appreciative. One of the things which I really liked is what she did with the garden, where she made these paths. There are no dead ends. It kind of, you know, you go down a path and there are, you can continue and keep going, and you find your own path. Whereas in the past, it was dead ends and you had to turn back. There's one way of walking down a path. But I like it now that you have multiple paths. And this is something that I want to bring into the work, that you discover the house and the grounds, and you discover actually the history and the architecture of the building in addition to the work. It's just so happened that it was perfect. It's a villa with all its domestic spaces that could feed into the project that I'm presenting. And it's nice to see that the family has a reincarnation in another space and another time. I mean, who knows, in 10 years from now, I might restage it again, and I'll be older and I'll look different, and it could be in a totally different kind of geography. That appeals to me, that the family somehow evolves along with the journeys, because it's, for me, it's all about the journeys.
Hanging around the house, around the corner, along a corridor, you might bump into a few very formal portraits of the member of the family. They are copies produced by an anonymous Chinese painter from the Dafen oil painting village in the south of China.
You go to the painting village and there are hundreds of shops or little factories or just individual artists painting in studios, doing what they're used to. Everyone has a different style and technique. And I found this guy on his own in a small studio, and he's painting three of the same Renaissance European painting. It looked like a style which could be suitable. And so I spoke to him and we agreed on a price, and I gave him some photos, and he did it in his own style that he's used to. I think he has some kind of training. I don't think he considers himself an artist. He considers it a job, and he is a copy artist, and it's a way of for him to make a living. For example, our conversation was about how big we wanted and how long it would take and how much it would cost. It was a monetary transaction. It was a deal. I mean, it was about the losing control of it that really interested me. I didn't know exactly what would come out of it. I had no idea how it was going to be at the painting factory. And it was totally by chance who you meet and who you talk to and what you get in the end. And even if it came out really ugly, I would have exhibited it. I think it would still be totally interesting. I thought that I needed to have something in the connecting spaces between the videos. Here in the villa, I knew we needed a map to help people around. But also, I thought the interconnecting spaces were very interesting. Corridors and staircases and passages and doorways and arches. And I thought a family portrait would be an interesting experiment. And somehow it fit the setting of the villa. And I'm attracted to these kind of crafty artifacts. But I don't paint myself. I like working with these crafts, so-called craftsmen, like the billboard painter or the oil paint copy painter from China. And it's my way of dealing with how we look at painting, for example. But also, I have to say it, I also am attracted to kitsch. I love kitsch. I don't necessarily think it's a bad word or it's ugly. Or it could be ugly, but in an interesting way. It's just something that I've been brought up with. Always longing for something real and well done, but not having the budget or being so far removed from it. I never grew up with a history of like all these churches with all these frescoes, you know. I grew up with a very, very young country that built shopping malls and none of this kind of serious art history background.
Let's go back to the characters. Lucia, Odetta, Pietro, Paolo, Emilia, and their interrupted lives.
I guess I'm attracted to films or stories or characters who are in the process of change. I think that reflects, like for example, me, my coming to Germany. I know that I'm about to undergo some change. So I think that's more subconscious that I like characters or films where there is some kind of turning point.
Tu conoscendomi mi hai fatto diventare una ragazza normale. Mi hai fatto trovare la soluzione giusta della mia vita. Prima non conoscevo gli uomini, ma avevo paura di loro, ecco. Amavo soltanto mio padre. Ma adesso lasciandomi, non solo mi fai riprecipitare indietro, ma mi fai andare ancora più indietro.
E questo che voglio conoscere me stesso. Adesso perché quello che mi faceva uguale agli altri è distrutto. Ero come tutti gli altri, con molti difetti forse, miei e del mio mondo. Tu mi hai reso diverso, togliendomi al naturale ordine delle cose. E mentre tu eri vicino, non l'ho realizzato.
Lo capisco adesso che tu stai partendo.
Sapere di perderti
è diventato la coscienza della mia diversità.
E cosa sarà di d'ora in poi? Il futuro sarà come vivere con un me stesso, che non ha niente a che fare con me. Devo forse arrivare al fondo di questa diversità che tu mi hai rivelato e che è la mia intima e angosciosa natura. Ma anche se non lo voglio, tutto questo non mi metterà contro tutto e contro tutti.
They are fragile, they undergo maelstroms, and the way the artist and the actors he cast play their roles, parroting unfamiliar languages, sometimes German, sometimes Italian or Chinese, all the language slippages and loops and efforts seems to be a way to unveil a double structure of vulnerability. On one end, that of the character, on the other, that of the actors who also question themselves.
That's an interesting way to put it, that it's a double. There is a double layer. But for me, you can't separate it. There are double layers, maybe more. But they're always together. I mean, we can't really separate it. I'm talking about acting. When I look at the actor performing, I see not just the acting, the first kind of performance, but you also see the meta performance, which is who this actor is. Because these days, when you watch something, more likely you would know that who the actor is. And so that actor brings his or her own life story to the performance. I used to work in a theater, and I always found it difficult that it was always the same actors playing different characters. Because I worked in a theater, I began to know these people personally. And after a while, it was like writing for certain people. And that happens very much in the industry. You know, certain roles are given to certain actors. And I was longing for an experience where it's only the first level. You don't know who this person is. And you're dealing with the performance, the pure performance in a way, without the baggage of the, but knowing the background of the performer. When I study roles to reenact, I study the background knowledge of the actors. Say, for example, when I'm doing Death in Venice, when I channel the young boy or the older man, it's more than that. It's channeling Dirk Bogarde and it's channeling Bjorn Andresen. And I'm channeling also Visconti's mark on them and how their lives were changed or entwined with Visconti. So all these things are part of the process. But I think when I perform it, when I bring myself to it, I think something happens. There is this rupture. You know, it used to be Dirk Bogarde, or it used to be in the German von Aschenbach, depending on which version you know. And to see my performance of it with a rupture in the appearance or the rupture in the language, there is a kind of, I don't know, a shock. I think there should be a kind of shock. And then the visitor has to kind of deal with it. But that shock goes away very quickly. And then after a while, one would suspend the belief and begin to engage with the primary performance, the character, who this old man represents and who this younger boy represents, without the baggage of the star, the actor, the director. Back to the vision of the writer or director in the beginning.
And if he likes decadent and questioning European movies, what about the Malay legacy might know, and that he also investigated throughout the work for Malay stories?
Itu barangkali prinsipal saya. Tuan tak boleh tinggal di sini.
Prinsipal? Apa saya mesti begin? And then, what I'm going to do?
Mari sembunyi belakang sini.
Apa itu?
Itu barangkali prinsipal saya.
The Malay, for Malay movies, actually, it's not affirmative at all. Kind of questioning, not a rejection. That's quite complex, because I made four Malay stories after I spent time in London, and I went back to Singapore to make an exhibition, my first contemporary art exhibition in Singapore in many years. And in the interim years in London, I had become sensitized to these issues about identity and like minority issues. And so when I went back to Singapore, I wanted to do something about the Malay identity, because in Singapore, it's the minority in Singapore. It's the majority in Malaysia, but the minority in Singapore. And it came from my interest in the film industry that was in Singapore from the 50s and 60s. And how there was a big change since the 50s and 60s till today. I wanted to question what happened in the meantime, because a lot of the things that I reenacted and showed in my work are considered controversial today in Singapore and Malaysia for the Malay Muslim community. Certain things like nudity or drinking alcohol or gambling or adultery, these themes are frowned upon and taboo on public TV. And a lot of these films are being lost because A, they were old, or the Muslim authorities in Malaysia can't promote these kind of taboo subjects, and a big part of the history was being lost. And I didn't want that to happen. I worked with some Malay Muslim artist friends of mine to re-look at these movies and to see it through their eyes and filter what are the things that are in danger of disappearing? What is deemed controversial? What is being lost? Because these are iconic moments and gestures from the films. And so I had a responsibility to do it because my Muslim Malay artist friends, if they had done something like that, if they represented a Muslim woman who showed her cleavage, or a Malay Muslim man who was drinking alcohol freely in a bar, they might get into trouble today. But because I was not Malay and I was not Muslim, to a certain extent, I had the liberty to do it. I had a license to do it. It's still a bit critical. And it was the first time that I used myself in a reenactment. This was the start of a whole body of work. I am interested in the question of national identity and national cinema. For example, the four Malay stories, that for me was important because the difference now is it's a majority Chinese population and government. The combined Malayan and Malay heritage is somehow a little bit sidelined. And for me, that's a struggle that I am interested in. So I didn't want to do something about Chinese Singaporeans celebrating our identity. No, I wanted to celebrate that we have this common past with our neighbors. And we had a Malay past. And I wanted to bring it back and show it, bring it out. Because my Malay Muslim friends would find it difficult to do something with it. And I felt it that I had to do it. It was a part of our national identity. And that's why I wanted to do all that research into our film heritage. A very rich period when there were Chinese film producers, Indian film directors, and Malay Muslim actors. A lot of the films and work that I deal with are kind of from these periods, from the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, periods of profound political change in different parts of the world. And when national cinema meant that it was a much more specialized area where it's targeted at a specific population speaking a particular language, all that is different today, where you mass marketed world cinema, so-called world cinema. And in a globalized population, it's all the demographic has changed. But I always like to look back at how things started.
Hello? No, here is Nick. Yeah.
The movies he decides to reenact often mirror his own personal life, crises and changes. He also inserts himself and some recognizable footprints into the narratives so that one may follow his traces and read the stories through his own lens and sensibility. Life and Death in Venice just happened to be an antidote to his intense experience in Venice. In Devo Partire Domani, he embodies the sun and embraces Pasolini's theories around art and creativity.
Up till now, it's still linked to my personal experience. I made Life and Death in Venice as a way to deal with my whole experiences doing the Venice Biennale. It was such an intense experience that I needed to do something about it. As an artist that represented my country at Venice Biennale, I also felt at once too young to be at the Venice Biennale. And once I had done it, we had some good feedback. And then the next question is, what do you do after Venice Biennale? So at once I felt also too old. So it was about not just my being in Italy, but about my own artistic career. So in that work, you'll see two screens, and on one screen I am Tadzio, the young boy, and on the other screen I am von Aschenbach, the 50-plus old man, and they're looking at each other. But there's a third screen away from this, which is the soundtrack, and it's me playing myself, the Ming Wong as the artist, playing the music from the film. It's the Mahler's symphony, a little bit away from. And that's also to put into perspective that it's also about, it's very self-reflective, that it's about my being an artist doing the Venice Biennale. And in the video, there are shots of the Singapore Pavilion, there are shots of the poster for Ming Wong's exhibition at the Venice Biennale. Biennale. So that's a very kind of self-reflective work. When it came to Devo Partire Domani, it was similar, but it did not have Ming Wong, the artist, present. It was actually very much my reaction to Napoli and inviting and working with the people that I met there and the landscapes and the other information that I came across. Mother, there were a lot of references to Pasolini because she was reading the book and the book appears in the sister's video and in the father's video. The son, though, became a video artist, became a contemporary artist doing video, and that's a reflection of maybe myself. But he speaks the words of Pasolini about art making and about how we can survive with creativity and the artistic process. And I love these. I love that passages. And it's something that inspires me as an artist. So the sun, in a way, embodies me. So in that sense, I insert myself into that.
Bisogna cercare di inventare nuove tecniche che siano irriconoscibili, che non assomiglino a nessuna operazione precedente, per evitare la puerilità, il ridicolo, costruirsi un mondo proprio con cui non siano possibili confronti, per cui non esistono precedenti misure di giudizio, che devono essere nuove come la tecnica.
Nessuno deve capire che l'autore non vale niente.
Che è un essere anormale.
Che è un essere anormale,
che,
inferiore.
Che come un verme si contorce e striscia.
Che come un verme si contorce e striscia per sopravvivere.
Nessuno deve mai coglierlo.
Nessuno deve mai coglierlo in fallo di ingenuità.
Tutto deve presentarsi.
Tutto deve presentarsi.
This new project I'm doing in Istanbul also has a very strong kind of like a personal input because I'm involving my mother. So it will involve the relationship between a mother and a son, and that will affect the reading of the work. Because the work is about a transsexual entertainer who is now 60 years old, and she was speaking of Turkish soldiers going to the war as though she were the mother of these soldiers, and had the idea that I would bring my mother involved. For me, that is a form of casting, which is always something I very, very involved with. Well, in my work, it's about miscasting or casting, to be very conscious of who is playing the role. For example, when I show this work, this Istanbul-based work, it would be known from the very start that my mother is part of it. It's not another older lady, you know? So for me, it was a casting decision. The casting becomes part of the work. That the work works because you know that it's the mother. Or the work works because you know that the person who plays the role is not at all like the character that's being portrayed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've summoned all of you here because I have every reason to believe that one of you is a murderer.
A murderer? One of us? Surely you must be mistaken.
If this is your idea of a joke, Inspector, it's in very poor taste.
I say, let's hear what the fella has to say.
One of you present here in this room is pretending to be someone or something that he or she is not.
Casting play a primary role since the very beginning of his video production. It is interesting to see how and why he cast the actors for Udumit back to 2004.
I want you all to think hard and tell me if you've noticed anyone acting in an unusual or suspicious manner.
Oh, how horrid. How could you say such horrid things?
It's all right, Marjorie.
Mr. Lockhart, tell me, have you any enemies?
Me? Certainly not.
Perhaps there are people, unbeknownst to you, who hate you.
This is preposterous. I won't be spoken to like that in my own home.
Inspector Pratt, my husband is a good man.
That one was made in London. When I was an artist in London, it was a time when UK was very concerned with cultural diversity, and they made all these directives about how cultural diversity can be promoted in different institutions and different fields, including art. And so I, being a subject, an object of those directives, I used those structures as my material. So the casting was all British artists, but they came from categories that were listed in the cultural diversity monitoring forms, as listed by the government. So you have Black, African, Caribbean, Asian, Indian, subcontinent, everything. It was about casting, and it was about British identity, because they were all... And I followed the process from the beginning. It used to be white, Black, Asian, other. And then it became all these subcategories. And then it became more complex. There's a category now for mixed heritage. So you can say you are white and Black African, or you are Asian and Black Afro-Caribbean, or whatever. There is also now disability and sexuality together on the same form. There's also a clause where you can decide to not state. You have the choice not to do it, not to state who you are, which I thought was interesting. But also it will change and it will evolve. And if you look at like America, for example, that had a longer history of migration, there, it becomes totally irrelevant because it becomes much too complex to say, on my father's side, I was this and this and this, and my mother's side, I was this and this and this and this. But people have now, in a recent census, a lot of people are open to state that they are of mixed heritage. It is a confidence to say that I am parts of many different things, and that would be a trend for the future. So it'd be interesting to see where these things go. So that was very rich material for when I was in London. And this is why I used it as my material. Because on the one hand, if the intentions are there, but if the actions that people take are misguided, then you will have a lot of damage. You would have a lot of damage. You would have it's a new form of institutional racism. That's why words like multiculturalism with a capital M became a bad word, because there were a lot of problems in many countries, in America, in Australia, in Holland, etc. It became so loaded, they didn't use that word anymore. They used words like culture and cultural diversity, which has its own problems. When I was an artist, I could either do two things. I don't want to play the game, so I don't get involved with this. Or I play the game and I can go and get extra, I have higher chance to get the funding because I am getting these like advantages. You know, I can call myself a Black minority artist and get funding to do these things for programs that were geared towards promoting ethnic minority artists and art forms. And these are dangerous kind of like actions taken by institutions. They would have a program for... They have a normal program, and then they'll set aside another program just for the others. And this is dangerous, which I didn't like. So I said, I have to play the game. I will get the money, and I will play the game, and I will make work that is about changing that or making people aware of the problems. Because if I don't do it, they would get another Black minority artist who would do Black and minority work and do exactly what the people wanted or thought was good in the first place. I'll give you an example. So I got money, good money to be artist in residence at the British Library in London. I was artist in residence, and they gave me money to do research and make a project and work there with the education department. It was like winning the lottery. And because... For that year, they had a big exhibition on the Silk Road, and they wanted an artist who knew something about the Silk Road that started in China and came to Italy. And I fitted the bill. And they timed it so that I would make a project which they could show during Chinese New Year in the British Library. And I did all that. But I didn't do a work about being Chinese. I didn't do a work about Chinese New Year. I did a work about British literature, about British literary nonsense. And I worked with curators from the Sound Archive, from Literature Department, and we made a performance piece which happened during Chinese New Year, but it had nothing to do with about being other or being about Asian or anything. I had to make it clear that we'll do something. And yes, I am an Asian artist, but I am not necessarily going to do something about being Asian. It's about being British, and it's about language.
The way that can be walked is not the way. The name that can be named is not the name. Tao is both named and nameless. As nameless.
It was a live performance where I had eight actors who became human gramophones. They came down the escalator wearing headdresses, like big trumpets, and you could take the hand and put it on a record. Their finger was the needle. And the actor's finger, when they touched the record, they would start to perform these literary nonsense pieces that you could listen to in the British Library. They had historic recordings of James Joyce reading from Ulysses. They had Edith Sitwell recounting her poetry. They had so many comedians, British comedians from the 70s, who made a lot of jokes using the English language. But these are all old recordings, and so the technology, the sizzles and the breakdowns and the slowing down all became part of the performance. So the human gramophones, if you stop winding the gramophones, they would start to slow down and stop. And then if you wind it up again, they could talk very quickly again. And it was a reflection of the material that you could find in the British Library. It was about a sound archive and the treasures there. Yeah. And in my group of actors, we had an old lady of 70 and a young boy of 10 years old. And some of them were English, white English, some of them were Asian Indian, some of them were different backgrounds, but all British, using material from British Library about British literary nonsense through the ages.
In a borealic iceberg came Victoria. She knew Prince Albert's Thor Memorial
This interview is produced by Radio Papesse, radiopapesse.org.